2015, Argyll and Bute helped resettle its first refugees. And nearly 10 years on, we're still working to support refugees and asylum seekers, but the schemes have changed and moved on and developed in that time. So I've invited Morag Brown, who leads our refugee resettlement team, back to talk about what things look like nearly 10 years on. So Morag, we're back talking about the work that we do with refugees, and you're no stranger to the podcast, having we've spoken about that before, but I know the work just hasn't let up, and right now you're en route to meet some more unaccompanied asylum seekers because we've just had a weather window in the Channel that's meant lots of people have been trying to cross the Channel, some sadly unsuccessfully, and losing their lives. I mean, it's still a horrific problem, and creating lots of work for the refugee team. Maybe start off by telling us sort of about that, the immediate work that you're involved in following that weather window, and just how it's developed since we last spoke about refugees.
Yeah, thanks, Pippa, and thanks for inviting me along today. Yes, I mean, the refugee work has got more complicated, I think, since we last spoke. There are more schemes, there are more rights and entitlements. But today, after we've spoken, I'm going to go and meet two young people that have come unaccompanied to the UK, made the journey from sub-Saharan Africa, and they have travelled by themselves, unaccompanied, without parents, without family, to try and come to the UK to flee war, famine, flooding that is rampaging through their country and makes them see that there is no future there for them. Young men especially are always at risk of being conscripted by militia or any of the military forces where civil wars kind of rampage. So they do try, you know, and get out and look for something better if they at all can. So these two young lads have made their way. They bravely got in a boat and crossed the Channel at the weekend, where there was a bit of a weather window and large numbers crossed, and some very sadly unsuccessfully. And as the way this scheme works, they get allocated to local authorities. So they are coming to Argyll and Bute. My team will be meeting them. I'll go and meet them and say hello, and we'll take them to a property. We'll get them set up and we'll wrap a support program around them, let them recover from their journey. And most importantly for this cohort, they need to get an asylum claim, a successful asylum claim made, to then get on with their lives. We'll teach them English, we'll help them learn, will help them settle in, will help them develop life skills. But really for those that have come through the asylum route, different to the refugee programmes, they need that positive decision that they can stay in the UK and get rights and entitlements.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to imagine what it'd be like as a young person to go through that. And, you know, I think it's fantastic the work that your team do just to provide that reassurance and that welcome, because it's you know, it doesn't even stop when they get to Kent. They then have to make that journey up to Scotland and not knowing what they're coming to. It's, you know, as a teenager, I don't think I could have fathomed what that would have felt like. So I know it's, when I see the pictures of you meeting with the refugees, and the relief is really visible on their faces when you see them and meet to other refugees or asylum seekers. It's quite something. But I mean, the scheme when we started was Syrian families, and it's developed so much more since then. Tell us a little bit about how it's moved on and developed.
Absolutely, it's very much changed. We're very multicultural now in the world of resettlement in Argyll and Bute. Syria was first. It was 2015. We accepted our first refugees there. that scheme changed and then became a recognition that there were refugees from other parts of the world. So in 2021, we accepted our first Sudanese refugees. Key here being that everybody was Arabic speaking, and we had Arabic speaking staff. We could support Arabic speaking families. So they came to Rothesay. Then it changed again, and in 22 February 22, Putin invaded Ukraine, and the Ukrainian refugees came. And that's a very, very, very different program again, with different rights and entitlements. But the Ukrainian refugees are all across Argyll and Bute. They are our biggest cohort of refugees, and there are Ukrainians in nearly all communities across Argyll and Bute, settling themselves into the community, making friends, working, children are in school. So that program's gone really, really well, and that meant a quite a quick expansion to the scheme as people arrived very, very quickly. That's Ukrainian arrivals have settled down now. They're still coming, but it has settled down. So we're seeing smaller numbers arrive weekly, monthly now. And then in January of this year, we in Helensburgh, we were provided with 10 MOD properties, MOD owned properties, and we brought in a first sort of large-ish tranche of Afghan refugees. So that program was established, and that's Afghan families where one family member, usually the dad has been was working alongside the British Armed Forces, and they just didn't manage to get out before the fall of Kabul and that the Taliban took over. So and once the Taliban government was in Afghanistan, anybody that was allied to the armed forces was at significant risk. So a lot of families made their way over to Pakistan, and then there were challenges there around status and whether they were going to get to stay in Pakistan. So about this time last year, UK government started bringing charter flights out of Islamabad of largish numbers of Afghans that had a connection, had that, Britain had that duty to support, obviously supporting the MOD. So the MOD in were up here, were able to look and identify available properties. So we've got an Afghan program in Helensburgh that's doing really rather well.
And I think, the lovely bit has been how welcoming all our communities have been, isn't it? Because it's, as you say, we've got that spread now across, it started mainly in Rothesay. It's now in the different forms across the whole area. But the one thing that hasn't changed is how supportive and welcoming everybody is.
Absolutely. I mean, the weather might be wet and windy here, but the warm welcome is absolutely, exceptional from the communities of Argyll and Bute. We saw that when Ukraine was stood up so quickly, with so many people coming through and coming forward to host families, to volunteer, to have people come and live with them in their homes. The community in Helensburgh, the way it rallied to get ready to support the Afghan families, is absolutely heartwarming. And Rothesay's just exceptional. I mean, the warm welcome that you get from Rothesay, from when you step on the ferry with somebody new coming, and the way the ferry crew greet us. They actually held the boat for me the last time, which was it was even more incredible. But they are really, really, really good, and it's such a lovely welcome. Because we understand, I think we can empathise, we can understand. So everybody wants to support, and refugees give back
Yeah,
in many different ways.
absolutely. And I mean, we. It can sometimes be a controversial issue, and we are dealing with lots of competing pressures on us. So we still sadly got cost of living crisis that many people are experiencing, and we declared housing emergency last year that we're still working to tackle. How do you, Do you feel that we balance those competing priorities? Because somebody might say, well, why are you doing that when you've got these other pressures? But it's a more complicated picture than that, isn't it?
It is quite a complicated picture. You absolutely have to be live and sensitive to all of the issues in within council, within government, and within the community. So all decision making that goes on in this sphere, who we can take, who we can support, any recommendations that I would make for you and your leadership team, Pippa, are kind of with a sensitive eye to what capacity we have. And it is really, really interesting. I think the Ukrainians, in many, many, many of our communities, especially up in the Oban and Lorne area, and to an extent the Mackay area as well, were able to tap into the seasonal employment opportunities that we had possibly struggled from when we'd left the EU. So very early on, the Scottish government had arranged a meeting with me in the fish farming industry to say, you're going to have a largely migrant workforce coming here. And I'm thinking, yes, I'm supposed to be supporting them for humanitarian reasons, but the fish farming industry had clocked that they were going to get a lot of labour that might be able to work. That did work really, really, really well. So we got a lot of people working in industries, hospitality, fish farming, a bit of retail, where language was less of a challenge because there were ways around that and people wanted to work and employers needed employees. So we're very, very, very sensitive to job markets, to employment opportunities. Employability is a big thing for what we do, but we are aware of that. But many, many, many of our refugees work. The huge majority are in employment. So therefore, contributing, paying taxes, etc. All the funding we'd receive from to deliver the services and support we do comes externally to the council. It either comes from UK government or Scottish government. We don't draw on council funds to deliver the support services we do. We make all the various schemes work for us. And I think the key one for us was housing. We absolutely have a housing emergency, and it has been harder. When we're looking for properties for refugees, we're looking in areas where there is availability. Rothesay does still have an availability of properties. It's not as many as there were in 2015, but there are still properties available there. The housing associations wouldn't identify properties for us if they had demand on the list. I'm absolutely know that of them all. So we work really, really closely with the housing associations. But the other thing we've been able to do is that if a refugee family comes into maybe an address that a community locally people might feel slightly undesirable, we all know some of those postcodes, some of those blocks of flats, etc. They don't know that. They just see a flat, and we make it as nice as we can, basically, but we make it as nice as we can for them, and then they look after that flat, and then maybe another flat gets made, nice, and another family moves in, and they look after that flat, and then they look after their neighbours, and suddenly you're changing the dynamic of a block of flats. That was most evident down in Helensburgh because ACCA were able to get funding from the Scottish Government. The Scottish Government had a pot of capital money available to refurbish properties for Ukrainians. It's a programme that's been set up for Ukrainians and with a view that Ukrainians would live in properties that have been refurbished for up to 3 years. So those ACCA had brought together a block of flats called Drumthorpe Court that had been previously boarded up. I mean, there were people living, a few people living there, but they were pretty well boarded up. Wasn't a great neighbourhood. Quite a few problems. Our colleagues in social work would know about those flats. It's changed completely. The flats have been refurbished. There are lots of Ukrainian families there. There are now other refugee families there. The families got themselves settled in. They arranged a litter pack. They cleared up their area. They've planted flowers. You walk in, you smell home baking, you smell cooking. They're looking after their neighbours. It's a complete transformation. And those flats weren't available for anything else. So I think what we need to do is say, yes, there is a real challenges, a real challenges with the housing emergency. I wouldn't ever say that there wasn't there, but there are still within that areas of opportunity that if you don't have that sort of, or you can look at things differently, we can take forward and do MOD properties in Helensburgh. They weren't available for anybody else. I mean, we've tried, haven't we?
Yes, yeah, we've tried. No, I thought I was going to touch on that because I think you're right. I mean, Drumfort Court was, otherwise probably would have sat for a long time before being demolished, and that funding was only available in these circumstances. And as you say, how great that that's properties back in use, and likewise the ones in Helensburgh that wouldn't have been released for another purpose, that are sort of providing. Providing those homes, which is fantastic. And I think it's not unusual. We have to balance competing demands, and that's part of the job, isn't it? Is they one doesn't go away, and you can't sort of turn away the people that are being dispersed across the UK, and we all have to play our part in that. I mean, I've over my career, I've worked in Leeds, which is fair to say was very multicultural. It's not something that we would have said about Argyll and Bute, but how do you think this is sort of shaping Argyll and Bute, and how is that expansion of different cultures and language and experience is being celebrated and benefiting Argyll and Bute?
I think I see it in lots of different ways. In our schools, we've got many more languages spoken as first languages than we had previously. And that's a lovely way of enriching culture, isn't it? To talk about different home experiences, to share, how people are different, what their religions are, what events they celebrate. So right from our children in the early years, right through school, we've got lots and lots of different cultures now in Argyll and Bute. I think the more people that are working is great because they're seen, they're there. If Tesco's in Oban, it was absolutely lovely when the Ukrainians were working there because they would be there behind the tills, they would be there stacking shelves, they would be there working, and it is just really nice to see different people bringing different things to an area. And I think so many of our communities are benefiting from that multiculturalism now. Different experiences. The events that we've had in Rothesay to celebrate Eid, there was the Ukrainian community went over to Rothesay. The whole of the Ukrainian community in Argyll and Bute went over to Rothesay last month to arrange an event for Ukrainian Independence Day, and that was so wonderful. I took the leader over to that, and he was absolutely amazed that there was these Ukrainian people speaking to Syrian people, to Sudanese people, because they're all studying together in English class, and it's just really, really, really nice. You don't get that in so many places where everybody just knows they're here because they're safe, they're here because they're wanted, they're here because they're welcomed, and they're here to get on with their lives.
And also the range of great food as well. Not only if you go to Helmy's in Rothesay, but I think you quite often get thanks for the team by way of home cooking, which is the quite something.
It's one of the good perks of the job. And actually, we did a lovely thing to take it back to the You Ask story, the unaccompanied asylum seeking young people's story. I brought over two young lads from Sudan earlier this year, and they were also coming over to Ross Sea to live. 16-year-old, traumatized, and they came off the ferry with us in Ross Sea, and they were met by the Syrian and Sudanese youngsters, the teenagers that we had already over there. And they absolutely, I've never seen so many people, kind of vie to carry the one tiny bag, because US usually turn up in their flip-flops, with nothing. And this boy had his one tiny wee bag, and they all pushed and shoved one another to carry this wee bag, to take him up to his house, to make him welcome. And then we got him kind of settled in, and we took him round to another family who had cooked a feast. And it was a feast of Sudanese food, and everybody sat round, and there they were, sort of guest of honour at this feast in their house. And to watch that and to be part of that, I just feel really, really privileged. I mean, the
Yeah.
food's great, but it's just the community element of it is lovely. The understanding of somebody else's trauma that comes from somebody that's had, a similar trauma is really, really heartening.
Yeah, there's something symbolic and meaningful about sharing a meal together, isn't there? And I mean, you've touched on it a little bit in what you said, but the rights and entitlements and the different then sort of bureaucratic hoops that the different schemes require. There's a whole support mechanism that needs to go about making sure that that works for refugees or asylum seekers, depending on their circumstances as well, isn't there?
It's definitely the most complicated piece of the job. And I think for anybody meeting refugees as part of their day-to-day business, as a council employee, somebody coming in to use services, or people in the community wanting to help, it is incredibly confusing. So I'll summarize it now, because it's an opportunity to also share that information. The Syrians came in initially on a 5-year humanitarian visa, with the opportunity at the end of 5 years to get indefinite leave to remain. And that means that they can stay permanently in the UK and in turn apply for citizenship. So the lovely thing is, we've got quite a lot of Syrians now with UK citizenships, which is really nice. The Sudanese came in with indefinite leave to remain. So after I think it's 6 years, they get to apply again for UK citizenship. I don't have any Sudanese with citizenship yet, but that's the rights and entitlements they get. The Afghans also come in with indefinite leave to remain, and they will in turn get citizenship if that's what they want to put themselves forward with. And they've got full recourse to public funds. That's the important thing. The intention is that, I think, the way the government looks at it, there's nowhere for them to go home to. There's
Yeah.
not a home. So Britain is now their home. Ukraine's different. Ukraine initially was 3 years permission to enter. We were supporting people who, it was unsafe to be in their country. Absolutely understandable. And that 3-year visa has been extended for 18 months. But the challenge, and I feel so much for our Ukrainian community, we don't know what's going to happen at the end of the 4.5 years. So those that came first, those that arrived in sort of April 22, they'll be applying for that 18-month extension next year, and then we're just going to have to wait and see. So it's what's going to happen next. But that's hard. How do you know for your children what you want to do? How do you know what you want to do you want to study? Do you want to invest time in learning English? Do you want to it's a difficult limbo situation for Ukrainians, and I really do feel for them. And as we touched on right at the start, anybody coming through the asylum route has no recourse to public funds until they get refugee status. So, and that can take anything from kind of 12 to 24 months, if positive, and an awful lot longer if a negative decision's made to sort out. So it is challenging to understand when, you could have three people standing in front of you, how their rights and entitlements are completely different.
Yeah, very complex, and as you say, for some, then the level of uncertainty is pretty high there, and makes it more challenging in terms of how they plan for the future. But I mean, you also mentioned, obviously, we do have businesses that can't get enough in people to staff up their businesses. We see hospitality businesses not opening all their hours. It has had a positive impact for those who can work, who've been able to do that. And as you say, your team, then part of the wraparound support is about employability and English lessons as well, isn't it?
Very much so. One of the things that makes Argyle's resettlement programme quite unique is all of our ESOL is delivered by my team. Now, I think if many other local authorities have to take that ESOL provision from local colleges or sometimes, the third sector, we deliver ours in-house. And it means that we can tailor a programme of ESOL, which is English for speakers of other languages, and make it fit our employment and employability opportunities. But also, we are very conscious of how an ESOL student's approach to learning is. So not everybody that comes to Argyll and Bute has been to school. Not everybody has had opportunities. Our Ukrainians, many were able to study some English in school, so their English level tends to be a bit higher. Some Sudanese can not be able to read and write in their own language, and we are teaching them to read and write in English for the first time. But we don't just teach English grammar. We teach English in a way that is relevant, English for day-to-day living, English for work. And we look, and as we deliver an ESOL programme, the team also look for employability opportunities to allow language to develop. You can't learn a language just by being in class. I think anybody that's tried Duolingo probably knows that. You need to be able to practice it. So we need to get people out and about in the community, using their language, doing learning opportunities, learning skills, making friends, and really just getting out and about. So we look at volunteering opportunities, we look at work experience opportunities, we look at supporting people into employment, and in time we will also look for people to become self-employed. And we look at Bute now, and there are four businesses, four refugee businesses over there, which is incredible. It really is. We've got a Ukrainians have with a tea room in Loch Gilphead, the beach cafe up at Sam's and Dumbeg's just been taken over to Ukrainian ladies. So Ukrainians, other refugees are looking to take their experiences and skills that they've had from before, bring them into opportunities here where we've got the opportunities, and deliver services that we can all benefit from. But that starts with understanding language, learning about business, learning about work, learning about the regulations, and we just do that really carefully in a managed way. And for example, we'll work very closely with our colleagues in environmental health services so that anybody taking over a food business knows what the regulations are up front in advance before they've even thought about where their premises might be.
Yeah, I mean, there's a load of work to just provide that knowledge that is so hard to get otherwise if you're not from the country and you haven't sort of grown up understanding some of those requirements. So I mean, that's coming up for 10 years since you first got involved in this. I don't expect when you started in 2015, you imagined that this would still be continuing on this scale, sort of nearly 10 years later. Morag, it's been quite a journey.
It has been an absolutely incredible journey. I feel I'm very, very lucky to have been there all the way through. I feel there must be a book there in this somewhere, all the experiences. It's just been a real privilege. It's been so lovely to get to know so many people, to find out about so many cultures, to be part of their lives, to see them develop from those. I meet just about everybody we have, apart from the Ukrainians. Everybody that comes to Argyll and Bute, I'm there to meet them on arrival. And they don't all stay in Argyll and Bute, but we're not asking for that. We're just saying, look, if you can come here, we can make you welcome. You can figure out what you want to do with the rest of your life. That's great. That's a really, really good thing. And while they're there, we'll look after, well, while they're here, we'll look after them really well.
Yeah, and you and the team certainly do that. So a big thank you, and I'll have to let you go to go and meet two more new arrivals. So look forward to seeing the pictures of them when they get settled. And thank you, big thank you to you and the team, and a very warm welcome to those that are just coming. Thanks.
Thanks, Pippa.
I hope Morag and I have been able to give you a sense of how the refugee resettlement programme has developed over the years. But the one thing that absolutely hasn't changed is the warm welcome that all our refugees get in all the communities in Argyll and Bute. So a big thank you to all our communities who are just so welcoming, and a big thank you to Morag and her team for all the support that they provide. Bye for now.
Pippa's Podcast.